Four score and 7 years ago, it was 1934, because 4 score and 7 is 87 years. So there you go. You learned something today. Basically, when Lincoln said that at the start of his Gettysburg Address, he was basically saying 87 years ago, our country was founded. I don't know why he couldn't have just said that. People spoke differently back in the 1800s. But this week, we are talking about Abraham Lincoln. I'm not changing the format. There was just a lot of weird things about Lincoln's life. So we're going to get into it right now. It's Our Weird World.
Our Weird World.
Welcome to Our Weird World. I'm your host, John Henson, and today we are looking at the life of Abraham Lincoln. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're probably still a little scarred about Japanese July last year. Maybe you're still scarred about the Black History Month episode from earlier this year. Maybe you're just a little anxious about what I'm going to be covering with Abraham Lincoln. But look, don't worry. By all accounts, Abraham Lincoln was actually a legitimately good person. There are just a lot of really weird stuff that surrounds his life, mostly his death. But you know, we're gonna look at all of it today. So, you know, pretty sure there are a lot of things here that you haven't seen before or heard before. But I think they're really interesting. So we're jumping into story time.
Story time.
Abraham Equiminius Lincoln was the second child born to Thomas and Nancy Hanks Lincoln on February 12th, 1809, in a log cabin on Sinking Spring Farm near Hodgenville, Kentucky. Or was he? Huh? Was he really? Also, his middle name was not Equiminius, but I can't find anything to suggest that he actually had a middle name. I just love the name Equiminius. I think there's like an NFL player who has that name, and then I think I've seen it like in a couple other places. It's just an amazing name. But no, Abraham, it was just Abraham Lincoln. But here's the thing. Everyone just kind of accepts the fact that he was born in Kentucky. Kentucky has... really laid into that. Illinois, for some reason, has really taken it. Well, not for some reason. I mean, we know why, because he spent most of his political career, really made a name for himself in Illinois. But there are a sizable group of people in the tiny town of Bostick, North Carolina, who really believe that Abraham Lincoln was born in North Carolina. Specifically Rutherford County, which if you know anything about North Carolina's geography, is kind of on the other side of Shelby, kind of between, I guess, Shelby and like Tryon, Saluda, Columbus, those kind of places. It's in the western, southwestern part of the state. But according to the people of Bostick, Nancy Hanks was at some point between her birth in what is now Antioch, West Virginia, though at the time was still part of Virginia, and between then and her move to Kentucky, she was actually given into the care of the Enlow family in Rutherford County. And when she was there, Nancy met a man, got pregnant, and gave birth to Abraham near the banks of Puzzle Creek. Now, there was a big part there that I left out, and the fact that she was not married to this man, right? She's getting around, or maybe she was raped. I don't know. They don't really make that clear. A short time later, Nancy left the area with baby Abe and moved to Kentucky, where she married Thomas Lincoln. Obviously, she then made Abraham take the Lincoln surname so as to make it seem like, you know, everything was on the up and up. There is a legitimate museum. There's the Boston or the Bostick Lincoln Center, which is a small white building at the edge of town. You can go check it out, go visit, which cites various works on Lincoln's life going back as far as 1899 to validate their story. Never mind the fact that Lincoln had already been dead for over 30 years by that point where they're getting their manuscripts from. But part of their evidence, I guess, includes a letter to a Confederate soldier that basically was telling the story of Abe's birth in Rutherford County and Nancy's departure on that wagon train with Abe in her lap. That letter was not written by Abraham, It was not written by anyone associated with Abraham. Like this is probably just like some crazy rumor that got started during the Civil War by a bunch of bored Confederate soldiers, and then it just got out of control. You know, it was just like, you know, the President Lincoln, he's actually Southerner. He's born in North Carolina, right on there by the Puzzle Creek, over there in Boston. No way. That's incredible. I'd heard he's born in Kentucky, and then he done went over to Illinois. But if you say, I mean, I ain't got no reason to doubt you. You're a good Christian man. You ain't going to lie to me. That's right. That's what I done heard. And this dude just sitting there making it up, probably. I have to remind myself to stop going into characters for too long, because I'll just do it forever. So this Bostick Lincoln Center is more than happy to offer tours of their, you know, quote unquote historical sites. They have narrowed down the location to exactly where Abraham Lincoln was born, like right there by the creek. You can go do tours and all of that. You can listen to their arguments. I don't know. It's probably a load of crap. I don't know that there's any legitimate evidence that Nancy Hanks spent any time in North Carolina. It just seemed like she had always lived in the Virginia/West Virginia area, then moved over to Kentucky, and then got married and had Abe. But whatever. Regardless of where he was born, you kind of know how Lincoln's life progressed from there. He was super into logs, I think. I don't know why else they would be named after him. But then he got into politics in Illinois. There was Stephen Douglas. I'm really just kind of spitballing off the top of my head just what basic Abraham Lincoln knowledge that I have. Got married to a woman named Mary. They had some kids. And then he won the presidency and people freaked out. All right. You think things are bad today. You think things are really polarized today. We still have not gotten back to the point where half the country is just like, screw you guys, I'm going home. All right. We haven't gotten there yet. We just angrily tweet about it, and make maps to show what it would look like if half the country decided to leave. So that's what Lincoln was faced with, a country that decided we're going to split up and there's nothing you can do about it. And instead of being like, all right, fine, screw you guys, go make your own country, Lincoln's like, no, come on, man, we got to stay together. Because I'm sure that's exactly how he sounded. And, you know, so he's doing all the stuff and he's running the Civil War for the Union, and things are going. And fast forwarding through all of that, and then we get to April 15th, 1865, when Lincoln gets assassinated. And here's where some stuff starts to get weird. Earlier that day, Major Henry Rathbone and his fiancee Clara Harris were invited by President Lincoln to see a play that night at Ford's Theater. That means that Rathbone was with Lincoln in the presidential box when he was shot. Fun fact, it could have been future President Ulysses S. Grant or several others, but they had all declined because, look, if we're being honest, community theater sucks, right? I know that's going to hurt some of you theater people's feelings out there, but most of you are not good at it, all right? I went to several community theater plays in my day, back when I lived in a smaller town. And I also saw a lot of high school plays, which admittedly is even worse. But it's just not good. The acting feels forced and there's no real connection to the character. It's not believable. I am very aware that I am watching a play. I'm not sucked into the story at all, at least with movies. And maybe Broadway. I haven't seen a Broadway play, but you know, I saw like parts of Hamilton. It's all right. You know, I kind of was able to suspend some disbelief, kind of, and really immerse into the songs that they were singing and stuff like that. But community theater sucks. And I get that we need it. We need arts and stuff like that, especially in our smaller rural towns where art is not appreciated enough. But, it is so bad. Anyway, basically, back to the point of the story, Abraham Lincoln asked a bunch of people to go with him to the play. They all turned him down. That should tell you something. The president of the United States asks you to go to a play with him or her, if that's the case at some point. And you are like, honored, really, thank you. But no, I've got better things to do. I mean, come on, it's 1865. I mean, we got the whole world in front of us. The war's over. There's a lot to do. We can go look at destroyed buildings or, we can go check out what the new freed slaves are up to. They're not slaves anymore. They're just black people now. That's pretty incredible. Wow. Who today, regardless of your political leanings, who's really nowadays going to, the president comes to you and is just like, hey, come see this play with me. It's going to be a pretty cool experience, right? Even if you hate the guy, all right? If Donald Trump had come to me and said, hey, this is a bad Trump impression, would you like to go? I don't know what I can't find it. I can't find it right now. But it's just like, hey, would you like to go see this play with me? Because he's now Italian. Hey, I'm Donald Trump. This is a baddie Trump impression. I don't know what I'm doing. You go see this play with me. I'd be like, yeah, I think you're a crazy person. But sure. Yeah, let's go do this. This will be fun. This will make a great story. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, yeah, some athletes, I'm really going off on a tangent right now. But yeah, I mean, some athletes will, I guess, decline going to the White House after they win a championship. But I don't know. I think if the president asks you to go hang out with them, you totally go do it. Anyway, Rathbone, however, he did accept. And when John Wilkes Booth ran into the presidential box, shot Abraham Lincoln, Rathbone attempted to subdue Booth after the shooting, but Booth quickly pulled out his dagger and slashed Rathbone's arm down to the bone, severing an artery. And as Booth attempted to leap off the box, Rathbone grabbed Booth's coat, which actually broke Booth's fall onto the stage enough that he broke his leg. So that's how John Wilkes Booth broke his leg. I think when we listen to the story a lot, we think that John Wilkes Booth just yeeted himself off the presidential box and broke his leg, kind of on his own. But it was Henry Rathbone here, who actually kind of messed up his jump enough that he actually ended up breaking his leg. But regardless, you know how the story goes. Lincoln died. And while Booth made his escape, Rathbone then escorted Mary Lincoln across the street to the Peterson house to be with her dying husband. He eventually passed out. Rathbone did, due to the loss of blood because he had this huge wound on his arm. But the physician who was examining the president eventually tended to him, getting him sewn up so he could fully recover. However, unfortunately, Lincoln's death haunted Rathbone's life, or Rathbone for the rest of his life. He felt really responsible for this. He felt like he had really failed the country because not only did the president die, but John Wilkes Booth had escaped. So Rathbone and Clara Harris, they were fiancés at the time. I did mention that. Yeah, but they eventually got married and they had three children. Rathbone resigned from his army position in 1870 and struggled to find a normal job. It's always been a problem for soldiers, I guess. He even began to believe that his wife was cheating on him, and he hated how much more attention she gave her children over him, which, dudes, I think that's going to happen. I think that's just a thing that happens when you have kids. So, why don't you just get ready for that? On several occasions, Rathbone violently threatened her because he was kind of just believing she was going to file for divorce and take the kids and run off and never see him again. Despite his troubles, President Chester Arthur, big Chester Arthur reference, appointed him as the consul to the province of Hanover, and the family moved over to Germany, because that's where Hanover is. Even though he had a great job in a new country, Rathbone's mental health just continued to deteriorate. And on December 23rd, 1883, Rathbone attacked his children after claiming people were living inside the portraits on the wall. Yes! seeing stuff, mental illness. Yay. I don't know. We celebrate and mock mental illness so much, but it's just so interesting. It's so weird. When Claire stepped in between Rathbone and his kids to protect them, he shot and stabbed her to death. And realizing what he'd done, Rathbone then stabbed himself 5 times in the chest, but he couldn't kill himself. And although he was eventually convicted of murder, he was declared insane and sent to an asylum. When he eventually died on August 14th, 1911, he was buried next to his wife at a cemetery in Hanover. But sort of in the cold, uncaring way that Germans do things, the cemetery managers decided in 1952 that no one cared about the gravesite and decided to exhume and dispose of the family's bodies so that gravesites for newer, deader people could be put in. So kind of sad there, but you know, that's just, it's one of the stories that gets kind of lost in telling Lincoln's overall story. It's just like I didn't even realize that Rathbone was part of the story. I think just in kind of all the illustrations and retellings of the story, it just seems like John Wilkes Booth just showed up, blammo, jumps off, breaks his leg and runs away. Like, we never really even hear about Rathbone in this story. But to go back to the assassination, so 9 days after Lincoln's assassination, Thomas Corbett's regiment was sent to track down John Wilkes Booth. Now, who is Thomas Corbett? He was born in London, but immigrated to New York when he was 7 years old. He began working as a hatter and inadvertently began huffing mercury nitrate, which at that time was used to treat the fur to make the felt that hatters used to make the hats. So he's just basically huffing chemicals all day. And the thing about that is excessive exposure to mercury nitrate leads to hallucinations, psychosis, weird twitching. I don't know. It's weird. The condition was so common at the time, though, that people who had worked as a hatter for too long developed what was known as the hatter shakes. So before like modern machinery and technology could make hats, especially felt hats, you had these dudes in here who were treating fur to turn it into felt, and they're just huffing all of these chemicals, and all of a sudden, you know, after a few years of working in this, they're just twitchy and shaky, and it's weird. Well, Corbett eventually moved to New York City and got married. Unfortunately, his wife and child both died during childbirth, which is got to be like one of the most devastating things ever. I can't even imagine. Corbett, understandably, completely devastated, and he turned into an alcoholic, which, I mean, honestly, that seems reasonable. I don't blame him for that. He then moved to Boston, but he was unable to keep a job, and he eventually became homeless. Well, one night, Corbett was confronted by a street preacher who then convinced him to join the Methodist Episcopal Church. And as most addicts tend to do, Corbett traded his addiction for alcohol to addiction to Jesus. This is going to sound very cynical of me, but I am very wary of people who are former drug addicts, alcohol, whatever, who then get super duper into Jesus. And that's all they're into. They're in church all the time. They're always talking about Jesus, always talking about the great things Jesus has done for them. When really, I think that is just what they have replaced drugs and alcohol with. I think that their addictive personality trait, I think, is you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's satisfied. It's not the right word. Assuaged, I think, is what I'm looking for. You know, it is satisfied by finding something new to really focus on and get down into. And so that's me. That's me being a cynical person. Maybe it's legit. I don't know. But Corbett's fervent new enthusiasm earned him the nickname Glory to God Man, which, I mean, that sounds like the most useless superhero ever. Because, I mean, look, Corbett was just going around just saying glory to God, glory to God, glory to God, glory to God all the time. And so you just start to call someone Glory to God Man. And then, yeah, it's like the worst Christian superhero, you know, just like, hey, put down that TV. Screw you, dude. Why? Because I am Glory to God Man. You're what? Glory to God. Okay, cool. Glory to God. All right, cool. I'm just gonna keep going. Glory to God. All right, see ya. Glory to God. Anyway, I'm so sorry. Corbett even began trying to imitate Jesus by growing his hair long, which that was weird. in the 1850s, and so, or, you know, around when he was living, that had to be super weird. But it got him out of drugs and alcohol. And after getting sober, Corbett finally got a stable job back as a hatter so he could keep being a little shaky guy. But he quickly got on his coworkers' nerves because Corbett felt that it was necessary to stop and pray and sing for the office whenever someone said a cuss word, which in Boston happens at a rate of like 5 swears per second. And look, I get it. Like, we've all had that annoying coworker who just really thinks that you should be into the stuff that they're into, because the stuff that they're into has really changed their lives, and it could definitely change your life too. And it's like, dude, I don't care that you get up at 5 in the morning and go huck stones in an open field with a bunch of other dudes. Like, fine, that's cool. Maybe this is a real conversation that I had with someone. I don't know. But it's like, I don't care. All right, if I'm interested in something that you're doing, I will come and ask you about it. Do not force it down my throat. All right. But, you know, it's just like people in Boston, they're just cussing everywhere. And every time, you know, Corbett hears a cuss word, he has to stop and pray and sing, you know, a hymn. And it's just, that can get annoying real fast. All right. Like, again, you know, I have no problem with people who are religious, but there are just those super Jesus-y people that are just like, dude, you're too much for me right now. Like, let me be me, live my life. I respect you. Do what you do, you bud. But don't get all up in my grill about it. One night in 1858, or sorry, so, you know, outside when he wasn't doing that, though, Corbett was spending his time as a street preacher, which really just involved him yelling at people and handing out religious pamphlets. But in 1858, things get a little interesting for Corbett. He was approached by two prostitutes, and he was so disturbed by the incident that he immediately went home and read chapters 18 and 19 in the book of Matthew. Now, if you don't know about that passage, basically it's the one that talks about if a particular body part offends you, then you should remove it. You know, if your right hand offend thee, cut it off. If thy right eye offend thee, cut it out, or whatever. So Corbett did the most logical thing he could think of, and he grabbed a pair of scissors and he castrated himself. Because apparently those two prostitutes came on a little strong. Maybe got a little boner action down there in his pants. And, you know, being a Christian, you don't pay for sex. You just get into a long marriage where you do it with one person. And that works for a lot of people. And Corbett felt that was the case. And when those prostitutes got there, he was really mad at his wiener for not agreeing with Corbett's philosophy. It is what it is. I'm just so all over the place today. Here's the thing, though. After he castrated himself, he didn't like immediately go to the hospital. He sat down and had a snack first, and then he went to church, and then he went to the hospital. Probably at that point because he had lost a lot of blood, and it probably hurt a lot. I don't know. Anyway. I think you know what I'm going to say. It's fine. Corbett somehow did survive this castration, and then he enlisted in the Union Army at the start of the Civil War. Just like in the hatter shop and pretty much everywhere he went, he quickly got on everyone's nerves. And when he openly criticized Colonel Daniel Butterfield for taking the Lord's name in vain, he was then stuffed in a guardhouse for a week. Because in the military, I'm guessing you don't really talk back to your commanding officer. I think that's just how it goes. Despite his punishment, Corbett continued his insubordinates and disobeyed orders from his commanders just because that's what Jesus would have wanted, you guys. He was eventually court-martialed and sentenced to be shot to death. That's awesome. I don't think we do that to our soldiers anymore. But look, I mean, a soldier acts out, court-martial him, shoot him. They're trained killers. Like, you can't release them back out into the wild if they're, you know, bad. I mean, I'm sure that's a very strong stance to take against our military, because as a country, we are supposed to respect them 100% and not say anything bad about them. But I'm just saying, you can't just let terrible people back out into the world. But fortunately for Corbett, those charges were dropped and he was discharged in 1863. And I realize that this is about a completely different person, but it's going to tie back into Lincoln, I swear. Corbett, though, you know, even though he was discharged from the army, he wasn't about to just abandon his country. So he reenlisted the following month and was promptly captured by the Confederates. He was returned to the Union in a prisoner exchange, probably because he was too religious even for the Southerners, and was sent to a hospital to be treated for scurvy. When he returned to war, he was actually promoted to sergeant. 2 days after being sent to hunt for John Wilkes Booth, now we've kind of circled all the way back here, Corbett's group had actually found him and surrounded Booth and one of his accomplices in a barn in Virginia. Booth's accomplice immediately surrendered, but Booth stayed inside like he was going to see this thing out. So Corbett, he was just like, I got this, you guys. He ran around to the back of the barn and set up near a large crack in the barn wall. And when he looked inside, he saw Booth aiming his gun right at him. And Corbett, acting on his military training, immediately shot Booth in the head with his revolver. And despite having killed a presidential assassin, there was one tiny problem with that. Corbett's men had been clearly ordered to capture Booth alive. And so when Lieutenant Colonel Everton Conger asked who had shot Booth, Corbett immediately stepped forward. You know, he's a good Christian guy. He's going to tell the truth. "Why on earth did you do that?" asked Conger in a way that was probably like way less profane than how I just said it. And Corbett was just like, "Providence directed me. It was Jesus. Jesus told me to do it." And Corbett was then arrested for that and sent to the Department of War to be court-martialed again. When he emerged from questioning, Corbett was greeted by a roaring crowd who hailed him as a hero, and he was awarded $1,653.84 as part of the reward for Booth's capture. After being discharged again in 1865, Corbett kind of bounced around the Northeast as a traveling preacher. And as time went on, though, he became more paranoid that the secret order, quote-unquote secret order, was going to get revenge on him for murdering Lincoln's assassin because they had wanted Booth captured alive. He began carrying a pistol with him wherever he went and began brandishing it at anyone he thought was a danger to him, which that's got to be fun to encounter. Just dude walking down the street. He looks at you funny. You look at him funny. All of a sudden, he just like points a gun at you and be like, you part of the secret order? All right. I'm sorry. I didn't capture him alive like you wanted for your Illuminati experiments or whatever you wanted to do with him. All right. I shot him. I'm sorry. You better freaking keep going, man. Glory to God. Anyway, that's weird. Corbett eventually made his way out to Kansas, where his fame as Lincoln's Avenger got him a job as an assistant doorkeeper to the Kansas House of Representatives. That's a real fall from grace. It's like this national hero. He killed Lincoln's assassin. And your reward, be the doorman at the government house. Anyway, a month later, Corbett had actually convinced himself that people who worked in the Kansas House of Representatives were discriminating against him. Can't imagine why. And Corbett responded by chasing them throughout the house with his gun. So I'm pretty sure you can't do that. He was arrested for that outburst and sent to the Topeka Asylum for the Insane. A year later, though, he broke out as the craziest of the crazies do, and just rode a horse off into the distance. He built a cabin in the forest near Hinckley, Minnesota, where many people believe he died in the Great Hinckley Fire in 1894. Maybe he started it. I don't know. But we don't really know what happened at that point. Maybe the secret order got him. Or, you know, I don't know. But weird story. And that's kind of what I was saying. It was just like the people who were just in Lincoln's life, especially around his death, just had all these weird things happening to them, and they were just ended up being weird people in general. And so you'd think that that would be the end of Lincoln's story, right? Like, we've covered his assassination, we've covered the people who captured his assassin. You'd think that's the end, right? Well, no. In the years following Lincoln's death, several people reported seeing President Lincoln around Washington, D.C. It started in 1869 when photographer William H. Mumler was photographing a woman he thought was named Mrs. Tundell. However, once the photo was developed, Mumler realized it was actually Mary Lincoln that he was photographing. Even more, he noticed a strange figure who looked shockingly like Abraham Lincoln standing behind Mary with his hands resting on her shoulders. And you can see pictures of this picture online. But you know, basically within years, you know, it was revealed that the photo was an accidental double exposure. It wasn't exactly Lincoln's ghost appearing behind Mary. It was just an old photography trick that was allegedly done on accident. But that didn't stop people from believing that Lincoln's ghost was just kind of hanging around D.C. Eleanor Roosevelt claimed that she felt Lincoln's presence in various places in the White House. Even the Roosevelt's dog, Fala, barked at nothing in particular, which, I mean, dogs do that. But obviously, you guys, that meant that the dog could see Abraham Lincoln's ghost. Come on. Even more, Dwight D. Eisenhower's press secretary, James Hagerty, and Lady Bird Johnson's press secretary, Liz Carpenter, both said they felt Lincoln's presence, because obviously you can sense specific people around you that you've never actually met in person. And also, how do you feel someone's presence? Someone specific, anyway. Like, I mean, I guess you can feel someone standing behind you, even if you haven't seen them yet. But I don't know, just like someone that they had never actually met or been around before. Like, I can't sit here right now and say, you know, like, you guys, I feel Mick Jagger in this room right now. I don't know why I went to Mick Jagger. That's the first name I could think of. You know, I feel him. I feel his presence in this room right now. He's with us. No, you don't. Shut up. Many people also claim to hear footsteps outside of the Lincoln bedroom because there aren't just other people in the White House. Harry S. Truman's daughter Lillian even claimed to hear knocking on the Lincoln bedroom door that she believed was Lincoln's ghost and not someone else. Along with knocks and footsteps, though, several people have actually claimed to see Lincoln's shadow lying on the bed in the Lincoln bedroom, which wasn't even his actual bedroom, by the way. It was just a meeting room when he was the president, so come on, you guys. Others have seen Lincoln sitting at the edge of the bed, putting on his boots. Grace Coolidge, Calvin Coolidge's wife, I think, saw Lincoln staring out a window in the yellow Oval Room. But it hasn't just been American presidents or their wives and their staff that have seen Lincoln. Queen Wilhelmina of the Netherlands, on a visit in 1942, heard footsteps and a knock on the door. Allegedly, when she opened it, Lincoln was just standing in front of her, and she immediately fainted. Maybe that was real. I don't know. Winston Churchill, on one of his visits to the White House, allegedly ran into Lincoln as he was completely naked coming out of the bath. And then there was like this little weird exchange. He's like, "Good evening, Mr. President," said Churchill, like, kind of embarrassed because, you know, he's fat and naked, probably very embarrassed of how he looks. "You seem to have met me at a disadvantage." And then Lincoln, ghost Lincoln, just smiles and fades into the nothing. All weird and ghostly like. Sure. In the 1960s, Lyndon B. Johnson and his giant wiener saw Lincoln's that's apparently a true story. I mean, that's maybe a whole nother episode at some point, but yeah, apparently Lyndon Johnson had a big wiener. Anyway, Lyndon B. Johnson saw Lincoln's ghost when Johnson was stressing about the Vietnam War. Johnson quickly making the connection between the unpopularity of the Vietnam War and the Civil War that Lincoln dealt with. He kind of asked Lincoln how he handled things. And all Lincoln said was, "Don't go to the theater," because that's how Lincoln talked. And because, I mean, look, yeah, ghosts have a sense of humor. Sure. I guess. Following other sightings in New York and Illinois, I don't know why I said it, Illinois, I'm sorry. Lincoln's ghost was last seen in the early 1980s when a White House operations foreman saw Lincoln at the top of the stairs. To make it weirder, several people, starting with Ulysses S. Grant's administration, reported seeing Willie Lincoln's ghost, who was Abraham's son who died at 11 years old from typhoid fever on February 20th, 1862. People who saw Willie Lincoln included Linda Bird Johnson Robb, who was Lyndon B. Johnson's daughter, and Linda apparently had a full conversation with the kid. I don't know what the conversation was. There weren't anything about that in the notes. But maybe Lincoln's ghost is still, hanging around somewhere. Probably not. But maybe. Who knows? But that's finally, I think, the end of today's stories. So, was I right? Did you know a lot of that stuff about Abraham Lincoln? I know it was mostly like, you know, tangentially Abraham Lincoln or Abraham Lincoln adjacent, but still, just I think it's just weird that there's so many strange stories that just surround his life from birth into after death. You know, just some people think he was born somewhere else, or people have continued to see his ghost. So a lot to learn today, but let's pick our top three.
What did we learn?
Number one, Abraham Lincoln may have actually been born in North Carolina. Probably not, but there's quite a few people who actually think he was. Number two, look, if the president invites you to go see a play with him or do something with him, you should probably go, right? Otherwise, if you don't, someone else is going to go, and then they may have a long, long period of severe mental illness because they feel like they failed when the president was assassinated right in front of them. So I think you should, if you're the first person that the president asks, you should take on that responsibility. It's do it for your country. And number three, Lincoln's ghost may still be hanging around Washington, D.C., specifically the White House. So if you ever get a chance to take a tour of the White House, maybe you'll see Lincoln's ghost. Probably not, but it is interesting that so many people across so many administrations have reported encounters with the ghost of Abraham Lincoln. Next week on Our Weird World, we're staying kind of in the government theme, getting deeper into the government theme, with some real government projects. We're going to be talking about Project MK Ultra, Operation Wetback. I swear to God, that's the name. I'm not being insensitive right now. Operation Dropkick, Project Chariot, and Operation Acoustic Kitty. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you are on the fence about whether or not you trust the government, this episode is not going to make you see them in a positive light. All right. Some real shady stuff going on in the government, mostly back, you know, in the 50s and 60s, if we're being honest. But maybe that stuff is still going on today. We don't know. It hasn't been declassified yet. So we're going to confirm maybe some conspiracies and get real weird next week. So thank you all for listening. Keep telling all your friends. This podcast is slowly growing, but love all the feedback that you guys have been providing. It's been great. And keep it weird.